And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is foreign encounters. Each of my guests is describing something unusual or foreign that we're encountering today. My first guest was a currency trader in New York. The U.S. dollar is gaining strength because of events unfolding in Japan. We analyze the currency flows of the yen back to Japan and speculate on what this might mean for the U.S. dollar and other world currencies. My second guest has spent his life investigating unexplained mysteries both in the United States and abroad. He's the host of the popular radio show Dr. Peter J. Shields' World of Unexplained Mysteries. We examine some of the world's greatest archaeological sites and discuss the possibility that aliens were influencing their construction. My next guest is the director for public communication of the World Nuclear Association. He's a very busy man of recently. We're going to discuss the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant disaster going on right now in Japan. Ian Horlacy is the director of public communications for the World Nuclear Association, an international trade association based in London. Ian has been involved with studying uranium and nuclear power since 1995. His function is primarily focused on public information on nuclear power via the World Wide Web. He's a former biology teacher who joined the mining industry in an environmental scientist role back in 1974 with CRA, which is now Rio Tinto. He is the author of Nuclear Electricity, and the expanded eighth edition of that book was published in 2006 under the title Nuclear Energy in the 21st Century. His particular interests range from the technical to the ethical and theological aspects of mineral resources and their use, especially nuclear power. Welcome to the show, Ian. How are you today?
Not bad.
Well, good. Thank you for joining us from London. I know that it's tea time back there, so I appreciate that. Let's talk about an update on Japan and the Fukushima Daiichi power plant that's going on there. An EU energy minister today, Gunther Oettinger, said that the situation in Japan, and I'm quoting now, is effectively out of control. The military in Japan tried to drop water on the reactor to cool it off, sort of like the fire helicopters here in California, but the radiation levels were too high and they had to abandon that. The prime minister is considering having the police shoot water cannons at the reactor to try to cool it down. And meanwhile, uranium mining companies and reactor builder stocks have lost 33% of their share values since Friday. So give us an update, Ian, from where you sit at the World Nuclear Association of the situation unfolding in Japan.
Well, it's certainly not out of control, as the EU guy said. It's a very dire situation, though. You've got three reactors which are really in a bad way. And the main focus of attention now is really just trying to keep the fuel cool in those, and making sure as it's possible that the main radioactivity stays within them, within the bowels of the reactor, within the containment structure. Now, we know there's been some compromising there. There's been some radioactivity released. The Japanese authorities have assured everybody that it's not a threat to human health. Though it's obviously more than anybody would like to see, but the main focus of the job is containing that radioactivity. You made some comments about helicopters and fire hoses and so forth. That doesn't apply to these three reactors. It applies more to the used fuel pools, which are high up on the fourth reactor, which is in the same general building. And the fuel pool seems to have got cracked. In the actual earthquake, the water steadily drained out over 5 days, and that used fuel is now getting very hot, and the idea is to get it covered with water again. But that's not the actual reactor that they're pouring water on, it's just the used fuel pool. But that is certainly another threat of radiological contamination.
Well, thank you for that correction, Ian. I appreciate getting the facts straight, because we don't want to blow this up into something more than it is right now. But let's talk about the immediate health and safety issues that are resulting from this radiation. First of all, what type of radiation is it? What's the half-life of the radiation? And then what might some of the longer-term effects of this radiation be?
Well, first of all, let's get the terminology right. We're talking about radioactive materials that are being discharged or leaking out of the reactor, and it's those that give rise to the radiation. And depending on what the materials are, you'll get different kinds of radiation. But essentially, the problem is the radioactive material. Now, some of that material is very short-lived. Some of it will just blow away anyway. It's one or two elements that might hang around for a bit and be radioactive for a period of time that are the main concern. But, look, I can't give you a breakdown of the exact isotopes and so forth at this stage. Nobody quite knows. All they've done is actual radiation measurements of a kind that relate to the dose that people get.
All right. We're talking to Ian Hore-Lacy, everybody. He's the Director for Public Communications of the World Nuclear Association. He's joining us from London. And, Ian, then let's take a step back for my listeners who definitely aren't as familiar with nuclear power plants as you are. What makes one nuclear power plant safer than another? And wouldn't you think that Japan is an example of one of the more safe types of nuclear power plants that are out there, despite this tragedy that's unfolding right now?
Sorry, is that a question to me?
Yes, it is, Ian. Yeah. What makes one nuclear power plant safer than another?
Yes, definitely. Look, but all Japanese power plants and all American power plants are fundamentally safe. If you define safe as being not a likely threat to human health and welfare, if you mean safe in the sense that they never break and never do anything wrong or so forth, well, you know, there's no human technology that you can say that off.
All right, well, go on.
So that's the first thing to say. These are, however, very old reactors. They're early model reactors. They're an American design, which have been very capably built by both American companies and Japanese companies. But the vulnerability here was the backup power supply, and that's what got swamped by the tsunami on Friday. And it's been a constant battle since Friday in Japan to counter the effects of that loss of power, hence loss of coolant in those reactors. More modern reactors don't necessarily need any electricity to drive pumps to keep them cool. They can often be cooled by natural convection. So in those circumstances, if some of those American reactors had been on this site, then the operators, when they lost the power, would have simply sat down and had a cup of tea. The internal workings of the reactor, with the sheer physical forces of convection, do the cooling for them.
All right. Ian, I don't know how familiar you are with California, but let me say that we've got two nuclear reactors that are in close proximity to where we're broadcasting here in Ventura County. To the north of us, we have Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, and to the south of us, we have San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant. So I'm going to come back and ask again, and you've sort of answered this in your last question, but I want to ask in more detail about these two plants. How safe are the California nuclear power plants, and what makes them different and safer from this Japanese nuclear power plant that's having the current fiasco?
Well, they're a slightly different kind of design, and I think they're a bit more modern than these particular Japanese ones. As I say, these are fairly old. They're 40, you know, they were designed in the 1960s, basically, and I think your Californian ones are a little bit newer than that. But look, they're well-designed, they're well-maintained, they're overseen by the most rigorous nuclear safety inspectorate in the world, and there's absolutely no cause for concern about them. And I know California is prone to earthquakes, and you can never rule out a tsunami. But as I recall, those are designed with reasonable margins in relation to both of those. Of course, any nuclear power plant in an earthquake zone is designed to shut down automatically if the ground acceleration gets more than about 400 gal. That's sort of half the force of gravity. Those would be in that category.
All right. We're talking to Ian Hore-Lacy, everybody, the Director for Public Communications of the World Nuclear Association. Now, Ian, interestingly enough, France is a country that is a model country for nuclear power. They derive as much as 80% of their electricity through nuclear. So what makes France a better environment for generating nuclear power? Why do they have more nuclear power plants than just about any other country on the planet?
Because they sat down in 1973 and said, what do we need to do to achieve energy independence with the oil shocks of that time? And they said nuclear power is the way to go. So they pulled out all the stops and did it. And they've got a highly standardized fleet of reactors, 58 reactors. And they've got the cheapest electricity in Europe.
France has 58 reactors. How do they get past the not-in-my-backyard syndrome, as we call it here in the United States? Everybody wants cheap power, but nobody wants to have the reactor in their backyard. How do they overcome that?
I don't know. I think there's. I think there are different attitudes, and perhaps they built early enough before that NIMBY syndrome gained traction. I don't know.
All right, fair enough. I love it. It's a good, honest answer that we're getting from Ian Hoare-Lacy, everybody, who is speaking on behalf of the World Nuclear Association. Ian, if I could ask you to speculate about nuclear energy on a worldwide basis because of what we're experiencing right now, particularly here in the United States. We've suffered through Three Mile Island here. Of course, in Russia, they had Chernobyl, and now in Japan. This is having an effect, certainly, on world popular opinion about nuclear energy. What is the impact that you're seeing on world opinion, and is nuclear energy dead in the United States because of these types of accidents?
No, I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, I mean, it's too early to say what the final sort of public opinion fallout will be until, you know, all this is sort of washed up and done. But I think that we will have to see what happens. I think that there's a very reasonable hope that, in fact, there'll be no deaths or serious injuries and irradiation exposure from this accident, but nothing certain yet. And we'll just have to see. But even if there are some deaths, I mean, at the moment, people are dying of exposure because they haven't got electricity. You know, it's a really dire situation there in respect to the loss of power and everything else. No technology is totally without risk. And as I say, the nuclear power industry aims to be safe in the sense of preserving, human health and welfare and around it, rather than being absolutely free of any technical faults.
All right, fair enough. Now, something that has always puzzled me, Ian, but you're much closer to this than I, is the world's navies are powered by nuclear power, that the United States Navy in particular has been using nuclear power in its submarines and now in its surface fleet for decades. And nuclear power on board warships appears to be very, very safe. At least they live with it and work with it in very close proximity on a day-to-day basis. What is it about nuclear-powered ships and in those close confines that make them appear to be safer than even the power plants operating on dry land?
Well, they are very safe. The U.S. Navy has an absolutely brilliant, I think it would be even right to say an impeccable record with regard to its nuclear safety. And they just run things extremely well. They manage it extremely well. They train people extremely well. The technology is very good. And so on. The Russian Navy had a rather patchy start to its nuclear experience, but it picked things up eventually. Those are the two main navies. The British Navy has some nuclear-powered subs with reactors built by Rolls-Royce under license from Westinghouse, and those are very high quality too. But look, I don't think that that you can say that one is safer than the other. I think what you can say is that the older submarines, for reasons other than their nuclear power plants, have been scrapped, whereas you're still running some 40- and 50-year-old nuclear plants. But those are nonetheless, while the design and engineering isn't state-of-the-art, there's nothing to say that they are not safe. They're just that they, in this particular case, they had that vulnerability of the auxiliary power supply. They designed for a 6.3-meter tsunami, having expected nothing bigger than 4 meters, and they got 10 meters. And that's just you've got to make some assumptions when you cite these things and design things. And they with the wisdom of hindsight, they got it wrong. But they're very justifiable. But I mean, you might also say that tens of millions of Japanese have got it wrong too, because they're living closer than 10 meters to sea level.
There you go. Mother Nature can throw some awful curveballs at you. We're talking to Ian Horlacy, everybody, the Director of Public Communications for the World Nuclear Association. And when we started out, Ian, I mentioned that the EU Energy Minister had made the comment, I guess it was last night, to the EU, the assembled EU delegates there, that the situation in Japan is effectively out of control, and you took umbrage with that. There's a lot of hyperbole going on right now in the media about this. General Electric is being blamed for those power plants. General Electric, of course, provided those power plants back more than 40 years ago. And I guess my bone to pick with that is that if I had a car or any structure that was 40 years old, if I went back and tried to blame the manufacturer because of an automobile accident that I had in a 40-year-old car, people would laugh me out of the office. But today, people are being prone to that sort of hyperbole. Can you sort of help calm some of the fears that the media is sort of stirring up with all of this and give people a more balanced perspective of what is actually happening out there compared to what people are saying?
Well, I think I've tried to do that, and I think that, you know, really you've summed it up pretty well there. These are sound plants. There's no reason why they shouldn't continue to run, except that, you know, really the assumptions about tsunami heights were wrong. But anyway, the thing now is really just the containment of the radioactivity within them, or most of it, and that we don't have enough left at the release that causes any distress or death.
All right.
But listen, I've got to run now, I'm afraid.
Ian, I was just going to let you go. I appreciate you being our guest. If people want to learn more, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, we're getting a constant flow of information. I've had about 400 emails just on the technical aspect of this in the last 6 days. All this is getting distilled and put up on the World Nuclear News website, and I would recommend that. The bulletins there, written by my esteemed colleague, are updated every few hours or whenever anything changes, and that is reliable information, as I think time obviously will be tested by time, but I'm very confident that it's reliable information insofar as we know what we're getting. And we're getting information from the utility, from NYSA, the safety agency, from the ministry, that's the government. And we've also got a Japanese speaker in the office translating Japanese documents. So all that is put together into this World Nuclear News facility on the web, and you can rely on that. Also, your own Nuclear Energy Institute in the United States has a dedicated section of its website, and that has some very good information also on it. They're doing a great job as well.
Very comprehensive. We've been talking to Ian Horlacy, everybody, the Director of Public Communications for the World Nuclear Association. Ian, I know you have to run. Have a great tea, and we'll talk to you later. Bye now.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.